Hare Hare Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
ended yesterday with the awesome affliction known as poverty is in fact a sign of mercy. Right? Job. So, number four, Nishtha. We discussed the two types of bhajana kriya. Steady, nishta, and unsteady, anishta. Unsteady bhajana kriya was further divided into six sections. Right? So anartha nivriti is anishta bhajana kriya. Right? But because you're trying to remove what's causing the anishta, therefore it's called anartha nivriti. Okay? So that there's... But little was discussed about bhajana kriya performed on the steady or nishta platform. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:17-18 explains the reason for following this particular sequence in the following verses. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So here are virtuous, that in themselves they're virtuous. This is being brought up. It means hearing about the messages of the Lord, studying the scripture on its own is virtuous. Or chanting the holy name is virtuous. It doesn't need anything else. It's independent, right? But like engaging our conditioned nature, that's dependent. It's only virtuous when it's connected to the Lord. Otherwise, it's not virtuous. Right? On the material platform, we'll say, yes, of the two bad situations, this one's better than that. So being pious is better than being impious. Right? But in reality, they're both, for the soul, not very ideal, because they're both disconnected from the Lord. Right? But we say connecting to the Lord, then it becomes useful. Then piety is better to connect it to the Lord as a medium than impiety. Therefore, piety is considered superior. Does that make sense? So here is that hearing and chanting about the Lord then on its own is virtuous. So that's the specialness. We always have to make that distinction. Right? Anything connected to the Lord is glorious, but these stand on their own as glorious because they're directly the Lord. While the other ones are the Lord's material energy that we're connecting to Him, and therefore it becomes special. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service under the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. The Supreme Lord is the greatest benefactor of the pure devotee. The saintly sadhus, the saintly sadhus. Therefore, the only way to receive the Lord's mercy is to first receive the grace of the pure devotees. The first verse quoted previously describes the unsteady bhajana kriya stage of devotional service. The second verse, 1 to 18, describes naishtiki bhakti, or steady devotional service, also known as the nishta stage. In describing the two stages of bhakti, both the verses mention destroying inauspicious things in the heart, of purifying the heart of unwanted material desires. The second verse quoted suits that impurities are almost completely destroyed, meaning that some residue of impurity is still there in the heart, right? Because as we remember, is that basically it's most things are gone by nishta, and then by ruchi, then basically whatever even of that is left is gone, right? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's there. So this first is that one is hearing. He's the benefactor. He cleanses who have developed the desire to hear. Because when you want to follow the process, then Krishna can reciprocate. Right? What would be the meaning of the person who doesn't want to follow the process and suddenly now he finds he has a taste for it? Right? It would be annoying. Right? He's come back, he's done all the different things like that, whatever he's supposed to do around the house, spent the time. Now it's time he can go out with his friends. Right? But he's got this taste for hearing and chanting. And all this friends, what's wrong with you? I don't know. It's like, it's going to be a problem. You understand? So when they want to hear, when they make that endeavor, that's when they can be removed. Right? So it's not that you're doing something. We should not mistake this with, because you've done this, therefore, it's because you have the desire. It's the desire, it's making the endeavor based on desire that pleases Krishna. How well or how expert it is, that's a secondary thing. Right? Naturally, since the result is for Krishna, you want to do the best you can. But the best you can will be dependent upon your conditioned nature, right? In the beginning. As one goes, then one can do so many things. Therefore, the statement that, the blind man can see the stars in the sky, the lame man can cross over mountains. So you're beyond the conditioned nature, but one has to be able to handle that. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, if it adjusts, then we may not do well. We had one god brother here back in the 70s when Prabhupada was here. Then he was terminally ill with cancer. They gave him, I think 1 to 2 years or something to live like that. So then Prabhupada gave him Babaji. Right, and he used to stay out at the. It was next to. There was a hut next to the Goshals where the boys' school is, like that. So there was all mango trees. So before, I forget what flood, maybe the 84 flood or something. Then the whole thing was mango trees. After the flood, only three survived. The three that are still there. And so he was there, and he'd come every morning, he'd chant 64 rounds, he'd do things for the deities, and, take part in the kids, their 24-hour kirtan, very engaged, and, very nice, and he'd live out there simply in this hut and all that. So after being here a year, then, I think a year or two or something, he had been here for some time, maybe even been 2 years, then, I guess visa or something, he went back to the West and that, and then he went for, checkup. And they told him that whatever it was in complete remission and he was out of danger. Bang, that was it, Went out and just started partying. I haven't seen him since. So, like that. I know maybe he's come back, I don't know, but you understand? So therefore, Krishna can do so many nice things, but the point is are we going to be able to handle it? It's annoying to us, Krishna, remove it, but what will happen when it's removed? Because much of the time we're involved in the devotional process because we're not doing so well materially. You know what I'm saying? If they've just come out with an article on you in the Forbes magazine, you've just done, an interview for what, GT magazine and that, and also there's some little bits of Newsweek and Time like that, you're on the Oprah show, like that. It's not that, then and you're sitting in your hotel room, you're on the penthouse suite waiting for the next, radio station to come or television, and that you're just thinking, this is so sad, I'm wasting my human form of life. I could be chanting and absorbed and, good chance not, right? So that's why Krishna mentions, first he takes everything away, and then if you're steady in that, then having come to that platform of Nishtha, then if you have facility, then there'll be no problem. Right? But for the neophyte, much of the time having material facility, why would he come? Right? Artha, artarti, jigyasu. Think about it. There's something lacking in the life. That's why one is doubting it. Right? But it's glorious still. You know, because there's so many people that have problems and don't doubt. You know, what's wrong here? Is there something fundamentally wrong with material existence because of all this? Right? Most people just think bad luck, or their plan didn't work and they'll come up with a new plan. Or, you know, it's useless and all that and completely give up. Or, you know, sin. So it's not, it's presented as a lower stage, a neophyte stage, but it's still glorious. But, you know, but when prema is what you're trying to get to, then we can't be too absorbed or distracted by the neophyte stage. Right? So here in Nishtha, one is fixed. So whether one has facility or not. But the point is that loving service of the Lord is an irrevocable fact. That's why it's called Nishtha. It's fixed. Doesn't mean one can't get distracted, but it's fixed there. So even if one gets distracted, generally speaking, as Prabhupada mentioned, very few devotees, you know, historically have gone away. Maybe hundreds of thousands have, you know, stepped out of the, you know, more dynamic or mainstream, but very few of them have gone away. Because even in that situation, they're still remembering the spiritual master, still remembering Prabhupada, still remembering, you know, Krishna. You know, there's some chanting or some little this or that. It may not be very dynamic, very focused, right? But they're still, so they're devotees. They're not, does that make sense? And then it's just a matter of time that then one comes back. Because I mentioned before is that one is there, but one might have the, you know, nicely situated, but still have some very strong, you know, distraction. You know, the multiplicity is gone. And, you know, some particular thing is there. Does that make sense? So we'll look at, oh, that's very bad. But if you look at it, one compared to hundreds or thousands, then that's pretty good. You know what I'm saying? It's still not ideal, but it's still good. Right? Like if you had to wash, you know, let's say, you know, a room full of dishes or something. You know, not just a couple of that, you know, I mean a big monster pile of dishes. Right? And, you know, and you're first looking at that pile of dishes. And then, let us say, you've been working at it a while, and you come back and there's a very small pile of dishes. Right? And then somebody walks in and goes, wow, so many dishes. You know, because it's more than they'd wash at their house. Then what's the reality? Right? That's nothing. You should have seen what was here. You know? So that's the point. But that doesn't mean that one relaxes. That's why the other side, after saying that, okay, so it's not so bad, and then it'll be said, yeah, but devotional service doesn't start till prema. You're not actually a devotee until prema. Oh, okay, then I got to work. You understand? So these two sides are being presented so that one will be inspired that wherever you are, you know, it's significant. And whatever advancement has been made, it's significant. At the same time, is that very, you know, the stark reality of where you're actually situated so that you don't get lazy or get, what would be, yeah, lazy, but where you... Complacent, yeah. And just kind of sit back and think, you know, it's good enough, the speed's good enough, you know. Does that make sense? Okay. So these two are then establishing. The second verse quoted suits that impurities are almost completely destroyed. Meaning that some residue of impurity is still there in the heart. Devotion that possesses nishtha, firm commitment and undeviating faith, right? So the point is not the lack of still some you know, impurity. It's firm commitment and undeviating faith. Well, we see before in the earlier stages that within Anishta Bhakti, that firm commitment is not always there. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Or it's there in great enthusiasm, but it's not necessarily a, you know, determination. Right? It's just this new and fresh and exciting, and so one's absorbed. So by the purification process, one becomes situated. But it's still that newness, right? So if one isn't able to maintain that newness, one might become distracted to something else that's new, right? Which happens to be material, right? That's why then we see here is that the subtleties are pointed out. Because generally we just, keep it simple, that's great. But what do you do with all those little things that your mind does all day, trying to find little better ways to do things and little more subtle and more sophisticated? What do you do with that part of your brain? Right? So if you're not engaging it in Krishna's service, it will be engaged in material sophistication. Right? Because you can see, generally speaking, devotees, as time goes, their lifestyle is more and more sophisticated. Not necessarily complicated, but it's sophisticated. Their houses are more tidy, cleaner, a little bit more aesthetics, a little bit more social considerations, stuff that you would consider of a gentle person, right? So it's not bad, it's not wrong, but it's just, it's been applied there, but it's their sophistication is not necessarily in connection with Krishna. Because those who the follower of the Vedic culture is also very sophisticated. But it has a different basis. Its basis is in the tradition, the Vedic, rather than whatever is called the tradition or the popular, fondness in the, middle class culture. Does that make sense? Okay, so one has to look at this, the commitment and the faith. Because faith means you have, is the first thing that's taken up, right? An association of devotees, right? So the commitment's there, undeviating faith, you'll also associate with devotees proper. So this commitment then means bhajana kriya. You're going to follow the process. So anishta means sometimes you're determined, sometimes not. So nishta means now it's become steady. Right? So these two main things are what goes more and more, that firm commitment. So then from that, then you're situated. Then taste comes, right? From taste, right, which is prajumna, will come attachment, right, aniruddha. Right? Does that make sense? And so that having, that, then it turns into the ecstasy, and then that deepens into prema. Right? Does that make sense? So basically you're establishing your faith and commitment, then you're developing your taste and attachment, right, until that deepens until prema. Right? There's a commitment to please Krishna, the faith in serving. So these things just automatically come. Yes?
So it can be said a little bit that nishtha is like a situation that allows further development.
Yes, but anything is a situation, So I wouldn't apply it specifically that nishta is the situation. It wouldn't sound right, The temple president's calling out, talking to another temple president. We have a bit of a situation here. Really, what happened? No, this devotee is so nicely situated, like that. And, So the point is it is the situation, means your situation is steady in Krishna consciousness. But the other is that you're dealing with the situation, but you're not necessarily clear. It's not always the situation you use for Krishna. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. More or less. So you could say nishta means you're using the situation in a consistent way always in Krishna's service. Right? Whether you're very expert at it or not, that's another thing. Right? Does that make sense? So the commitment and the undeviating faith would be your prominent. But yes, of course, you can say the situation is steady. But that's it. At the stage when anartha still persists in the heart, and the devotees may try as hard as possible to counteract them by devotional service, yet the five internal obstacles, laya, vikshepa, apratipati, kashaya, and rasavada, undermine his attempts to reach steadiness in devotion. Once the anarthas are removed, then these five obstacles are almost abolished, and devotion becomes firm and undeviating. Therefore, it can be said that the absence of these five impediments in the heart are symptoms of nishtha bhakti. Right? So again, we're going back to this thing of the firm commitment and undeviating faith. So it's not necessarily other symptoms, right? So then here is that what gets in the way are these five. And then these five then are manifest, you know, through four, as we saw before, as the your four categories of what of manifestation of attachment to sinful activities, pious activities, offenses, and what was it? Aparads, right? Something. They're kind of similar, as you can see when they come. Yeah, the what comes up from devotional service, and I guess what doesn't come up from devotional service. And then their going away is in these five levels we discussed. Oh, from sinful, pious, offenses, and from devotional service. Okay, and then you have, so these then obstacles then, you know, are specifics where we can see in our practice. You know what I'm saying? In other words, these others are symptoms of what's not the practice. Right? But these are symptoms within the practice, what is the particular thing that's wrong. The five obstacles are defined in the following way. One, laya, is the weakness of being more sophoric during hearing about the Lord than while chanting his names.
What does sophoric mean?
What does sophoric mean?
Is it
soporific?
Tendency to induce drowsiness or sleep.
Tendency to induce. Okay.
Attracted to sleeping.
Like that. Weakness of being more attracted to sleeping during hearing about the Lord than while chanting his names. And more attracted to sleeping while remembering Lord Hari than during hearing about him. Right? So in other words, there's a weakness where one tends to fall asleep. Like that. You know, probably everyone has or has heard about, you know, very exceptional stories of these things I've heard about. One class, or everyone, including the speaker, fell asleep. The whole class is just quiet for, you know, some time. I'm not sure who woke up first, but I don't think it was the speaker. But everyone's just sitting there and asleep. So that was one. And another one, you always hear the one where the guy's there and then suddenly there's this crash. And then the devotee was standing up and fallen, and he had just fallen over. And the best part about it, he's still asleep. He just, you know, from standing up, he just hit the floor and he's still out cold. You know. So, you know, we always have those. Vikshepa is talking or thinking about mundane nonsense during devotional activities such as hearing or chanting. Okay. A pratipati is when both laya and vikshepa are absent, but at times one still feels incapable of or disinterested in hearing, chanting, and so on. So you're not falling asleep and not distracted by material discussions, you know, or material nonsense, but you don't necessarily have that attraction to Krishna, right? So it's a neutral state. Kashaya is defined as the tendency to display such faults as anger, greed, and arrogance during devotional activities. Right? Someone's absorbed, but these unfortunate qualities are still coming up for some reason. And rasa svada means that the mind is so attached to sense pleasure often meditating on it, that he's unable to hear and chant with concentration. Right? So these other things may or may not be there, but this is, you know, one just is so distracted by it. Yes.
Vikshepa, which is stop eating mundane nonsense during devotional activities. Sometimes during Tulasi, we talk about some nonsense.
No, if it's about the service and all that, then it's not exactly this. But it may or may not be the appropriate time to discuss it. You know, so that would mean that you have then it wouldn't be vikshepa, it would be this apratipati. Is that you're there, you're discussing devotional service, that the one at hand isn't the one that's attracting you. You know, so it's a mix. You're engaged in the service, but at the same time, that's there a little bit, you know. But it's not, you know, the guys are over there and just goofing on everything. Like that. Is that okay?
Vikshepa is the level named often hard struggle. Yes?
Yeah, could be. Hard not talking nonsense, so, you know. Yeah, hard struggle because you don't feel like doing it. You don't have anything against it, but you don't feel like doing it. Right? It means, in other words, there's no mundane things getting in the way. You're not materially attracted. Right? And you're not sleepy. You're just not inspired. So that doing something that you're not inspired at, that's hard, right? So when we say, just looking at it in the inverse, to get an idea, is that we say the hard struggle for existence. Everyone would love to just sit back and you know, not do anything and just enjoy themselves, but they have to work. They have to do something they don't really want to do. But they see the importance, so they do it, right? So it's the same thing as one may not appreciate, or may not appreciate doing it, but one knows the purpose of it and the benefit. So, therefore, one does it. So that'll be more difficult. Right? So Nishtha will have these elements of firm commitment and undeviating faith, because you may not necessarily have the taste. This is an interim state. It's fixed, but you don't have ruchi. But you've given up material taste. You know what I'm saying? But because of your determination, you're doing it very nicely and going through. And so the purification is there. It's very shortly before a taste comes, and then it becomes dynamic. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if you have, just like if you in poverty are fully Krishna conscious, and especially going from having facility to poverty, right? A poor person being poor is not any test. Right? Specifically. If they show all good qualities, then yes, of course, that's there. But otherwise, your average poor person, it's not that itself would be a place of testing one's detachment. It would be having something, what you do, and then losing it. You know what I'm saying? You know, or in the case of maybe giving it up. Like we see the Goswamis, they have all the possessions, they give it up. So it's a matter of, that's where you can actually see. Because then if you're comfortable with that, then it's not a matter of the facilities or what's important, it's devotional service. Does that make sense? So then Krishna can give all the facilities. Does this make sense? Sometimes one sees that one is doing all things, making all arrangements, and everything's going very nicely. And but you know, in a relationship. But then a time comes up where, even though it's been shown that all that facility and all that interaction is considered very important to the person, but they want to. They ignore it or say it's not important, you know, or they, how you say, or take it a step further, things that you feel are important in your life, they'll get in the way of. Does this make some sense? From that, then, the testing to see what's important. The things or the field or the activity or the relationship itself. Right? So if one always has a problem with that, then the testing will continue until they're satisfied, right? You stop a test when you're satisfied. But if you acknowledge the more greater importance of the relationship, then there's no need to further test. Things go back to normal. Does this make sense? Was it too subtle? You know? Okay. Let us say you're at a, you know, board meeting. It's special. You really got to, you know, make a presentation. This means everything to your career and everything. But to do this, you've been spending weeks, you know, or months preparing, and therefore, you know, cutting out of family time and other things. And there was a vacation you were going to take that you planned last year, but, you know, it's just the wrong timing. You'll do it afterwards. You know, and so all this and that. And so right just as you're about to begin or something like that, then someone calls. Right? And the point is who's more important, them or all this? Right? So if you react badly, then, you know, they'll have to try testing again. But if you react okay, then you handle it, then... You understand? So the point is if you can in the situation, it's not the situation, it's not the facilities, it's not even the activity that's important, it's the relationship. Then you can have all facilities, great situations, great abilities, and you won't forget Krishna.
This is Nishtha.
Yeah. It was just showing in relationship to why sometimes things would be taken away or where you can see it, where you can test it. Does that make sense? Now does it make sense? Yeah? Okay. Yes.
When these points would the overlap be to the anatta of coming from devotional service related to my question the other day?
What we can see is, I think what it mentioned before, at ruchi, then that all goes away. Because at ruchi means you have a dynamic taste for the devotional process, you know, from hearing and chanting. So any distraction that would come from the facilities coming from devotional service, that wouldn't be a taste anymore. So we can see is that that would come therefore you would take it that nishta is the first in the cycle of three of the madhyam. So you could have the remnants of the neophyte platform coming through up to that much. Does that make sense? But at the same time, if you're looking at it, that would be going away also. If you divide nishta into three, the first stage of that would have more of that. The second would be starting to get written by the end. Basically, there's no interest. So then the taste can come. Does that make sense? So there's always this element of this cycle of three. You know? So in other words, if it doesn't make sense on a bigger level, then you have to look at it smaller. If it doesn't make sense on the smaller, you have to look at it bigger. In other words, the practicalness of applying the philosophy is what, in that situation, actually what to apply. You know, in other words, what is the thing to test? You know, does that make sense? Let's say it's a regular day, you know, and then. And so there's a schedule, and everyone's trying to keep the schedule, and so, you know, that's what's being, you know, much of the time discussed. I had a problem in this, I got distracted by that. And so, let's say lunch being on time, you know, that would be something that you would judge by. Right? You know, so okay, lunch is on time, so that worked like that. Great, lunch is on time today. You know, and stuff like that. Okay? Let us say it's a special situation. Maybe it's, you know, your birthday or something else, right? And so they've arranged something special, right? And it's also on time. So when they bring in all this special arrangement because it's your birthday, would the appropriate comment go, great, it's on time? No. So that's the point. You can say, no, but it is on time. It's a fact. But there's mood. So you know, so one has to see is that therefore it doesn't apply. Like for these other things that we're talking situation. But like here with Nishta, we're not so much talking that. You can apply it if you go through a few stages. But it's not the direct obvious. Right? The obvious is the faith is now fixed and the commitment is fixed. Right? Like that. And by using that, then you also, it fixes very nicely, it's obvious what it is. At the same time is that there's some overlap of the anartas, it's not going to be a problem. Right? And to fix that full taste and ruchi hasn't come. So then you might have these things, there's, you know, there's no problems, but there's no, you know, drive. You know, it means not inherent drive that inspires, but you because you're committed, you'll do it. Right? If you're in anishta, there's no taste, you may not do it. But in nishta, you'll do. Like that. So therefore, that commitment and that faith, these are the ones that are to be noted. Because the madhyama, someone comes up, says all kinds of nonsense philosophy, he doesn't know what to say, but still his faith remains. But the neophyte, they come up with some nonsense philosophy, he may be distracted. Right? If he's a third class pure devotee, he won't be distracted. But he won't have any idea what to say. Right? The madhyama will make a good shot. Maybe he'll win, maybe he won't. Does that make sense?
The dhamma will be able to.
He'll always be able to because he's seeing beyond the conditioning. So he can always see what is actually the platform that they're discussing from. You know? Just like example of, I forget whose show it is, but it's, you always have them, I think you still have them going on. It's, you have a show where you have a host, and you have ones that are pleasant, you know, and nice and all that kind of thing, but you have the one who is not pleasant. He invites someone to the show, and basically just, you know, very cleverly just rips them to shreds. And if they can survive, then he has great respect for them. And, you know, in other words, he's one of those that are tough to convince. But if you convince him, then the public that's watching, they would also be convinced. So it's like, but the other one is someone you're already convinced of, then you invite them to the show. And then everyone else just kind of goes along with it. You understand? So Prabhupada was invited to one of these shows where they always just make, you know, just harass the person. And it's an hour show, so they can really have a good time. It's not, you know, half an hour and then, you know, with commercials. And this was back when there were only, you know, what do you call it? You know, on the hour, half hour, and the quarters, there was commercials. Right? So, you know, at the quarter was, I think 30 seconds. On the half hour was a minute, and on the hour, I think there were 3 minutes. Now I think it's every 10 minutes you have 3 minutes of commercials, something ridiculous. So the shows were longer also. So then, because we're different, we do everything different, and we're speaking about, you know, against material civilization and, you know, and all that, and these kind of things, and so it's known. So the person invites Prabhupada to the show with the idea that he's going to, you know, make him look bad in the eyes of the public. So his first question is, you know, what does he think of, you know, the American culture, something like that, you know. Because the idea is he's going to say all kinds of things and then all the people on the show are going to be against and then I'm not sure if they call in or, you know, it's one of those things like that. So the Prabhupada says, oh, it's very nice. It says, you can see is that, you know, we have all our students and they're so nice and intelligent and respectful and committed to the process. So that means good son means good parent, good mother. You know, so therefore, you know, like that. And then the guy didn't know what to say. So then, you know, his whole plan for the whole show was thrown out the window. So then after that, very submissively, so, what do you do? What is, you know, yeah, you know, what else do you ask, you know, like that. So that's his, you know, Prabhupada can see what's behind what he's trying to actually do and get at. And so he can just go under that, because Krishna consciousness already includes all rasas, all mentalities, but properly situated. So he can see what it is, and so there. So the Uttama, you can't defeat the Uttama. Like that.
Some people say that Prabhupada could tie a knot in a drop of water.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Portuguese
say. Yeah. And still it will sparkle, right? Yes.
But just to clarify on my question before, so that would mean the person who is on the Baba platform but gets distracted by I'm the big guru, he would be the Kanista Uttam.
No. Yeah, you could say like that. If you're taking Uttam as a platform, then you could say yes. Because, see, we're taking is that, if we're looking at it that way, then you're looking at basically prema as your Uttam of that. Then those who have gotten to the point of purvarag, you know, or samadhi in the third stage of smaranadasa. Right? So, from there, that after that, that would be your, you could say your madhyam, you know, because they're fixed. Before that, then sometimes, then generally speaking, you know, and here we're saying about fixed and not fixed, we're talking about, you know, moments. Like I remember a devotee telling me about, I think it was Bhakti Chumash, it may have been Krishnadas Babaji, and he was talking to another, you know, other Babaji. But, you know, Gaudiya, you know, bona fide like that. And one was saying about how 11, kind of, he's gotten it now, or 11, you know, out of the hour, about 11 minutes, he's, you know, completely, fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna, like that. And the other Babaji was saying that his problem is those 11 minutes, you know. In other words, except for the 11 minutes, he's always absorbed. You know what I'm saying? You know, it would be like working out the difference between, you know, these high-end, you know, sports cars or something that cost hundreds and thousands of millions. You know, the difference is a little this way and that way. You know, this one, you know, the handling is really great, but it's not as comfortable to sit in. And, you know, there's little things like that. They're not big. You know what I'm saying? So you're trying to you're discussing, you know, subtle degrees of perfection. Perfect, more perfect, most perfect, like that. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yes.
This five obstacles, we can say that they are related to the offenses?
Related to the offenses? Everything will be related to offense, in that if you commit offense, it will always bring up something mundane. Some kind of reaction.
But in order to avoid this five obstacles, we need to diminish the offenses. We need to diminish.
Well, you always said, because of offenses are the strongest of, as we mentioned, the other ones are indirect. Our attachment to piety, impiety, it's just varieties of illusion, right? And then that coming up from devotional service, that's just being, by habit, distracted by those things that were material before but now are spiritual. Right? In other words, enjoying material facilities or enjoying spiritual facilities. You know, it's just habit. It's slight though. But offenses then, because these are basically your situations, but offenses is dealing with the people. Right? So that's different. Does that make sense? It's offense to the deity, to the name, to the devotees. So it's always the greater of the offenses. So if that's there, then nothing can go really well. So one has to reduce those. If one reduces those, generally speaking, the other three are not going to be of great significance. But still, one should know they're there. So offenses will make these come up stronger. You know what I'm saying? But it's not specifically that they're, because these are obstacles of or anartas, but anartas in four categories. So it can be from any of these kind of things, because you're not interested at all in all these spiritual things, so you fall asleep. But if we, you know, turn on the television, you may be able to stay up all night. You know what I'm saying? So what is the cause of it's another thing. But definitely if there's an offense, these are going to start coming up. That. So does that make sense? So you wouldn't say it's directly connected to that, because they're just a symptom of any of the anartha. Yeah, it's just anarthas means these obstacles will be there. It means how much you're committed to the Krishna conscious process. You know, it means, in other words, how much are you absorbed in hearing and chanting? So the one hearing and chanting, you fall asleep. You know, the next one is you're doing the activities, but you're, you know, the one is you're not involved in the activity. You just fall asleep. This one, you're involved in the activity, but you're still absorbed in material discussions or on the side, all kinds of, you know, craziness, right? The third one is you're not, you know, you're not attracted by anything material or are distracted by any mundane activities or stuff like that, but you're not attracted specifically to the spiritual. Then you're engaged in the devotional activities, so it doesn't, the other three may not be there, but still this anger, greed, arrogance, they come up during it. Just as purification, as it mentions, the muni, one of the symptoms is they can get easily angry, right? Because they're controlling the senses, you know, using renunciation, that it may come out as anger or all arrogance or these kind of things. That's why you're very careful with munis, right? Means if you offended a devotee, he himself may not respond badly, right? Doesn't mean Krishna won't, but he won't. But the muni, there's every chance that he himself will respond badly. You know, not that you don't deserve it. You know, we can't say, oh, you're a muni, why you're... No, it's not your business. Like on the, you're riding on the bus, you know, and the Bengalis harass you, and then when you get upset, oh, you're a sadhu, why are you getting angry? No, it's not like that. That's not the business. Does that make sense? You know, or is you're engaged in the things, maybe the anger is not coming up, you know, you're dynamic in it, but you're still meditating on these other things. You know, you're enthusiastic to chant, but you're still meditating on these. So, you know what I'm saying? So they're just showing us these various aspects where that absorption is being distracted. Does that make sense? You know, the lack of inspiration to do anything, the inspiration, you know, you're okay with devotional, but your activity, but you're distracted by other activities or talk, or you're not distracted, but you're not also inspired, or you're doing the activity, but bad qualities are manifesting in the process, you know, or it's that, you know, or you're performing the activity, but qualities aren't coming up, but what you're thinking about isn't. Does that make sense? You know, but because these can come when you start, when they first started churning the milk ocean. What was the first phenomenon? Poison. Right? So the point is that only activity will get result. So if there are bad qualities, it's only through activity that the bad qualities will go away. So if one performs devotional service, bad qualities come up, no one should be surprised. Right? If they're surprised, then they don't quite fully understand the process. Because when you start, all the bad things will come out first. Then there'll be the nectar, right? So in the beginning, as you go, and as we see, is that these anarthas leave the heart at different stages. So one shouldn't be surprised if something that leaves at a higher stage is leaving at that. No, but I, you know, in my mind, you know, pure means completely, you know. In other words, generally when we say pure devotee, we, in our mind we mean pure unalloyed. You know, like that. So we can't distinguish the levels of pure devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? And so because of that, we may be surprised that something is there. You know, how can Bharat Maharaj fall down and he's an Uttamadhikari? You know, and he's attached to a deer. But the dealings of attachment's different. But the point is he's thinking of the soul. The Brahman platform is there. He's thinking of the soul and how the soul being conditioned is, going to feel bad that it doesn't have its mother. So out of compassion for the soul who thinks he's a deer, right? It's not the body. It's not, oh, it's a cute deer. Yeah, can we keep it? You know, it's not one of those. You know? He's seeing the soul. He's seeing the Brahman platform. Or maybe even being the same as the soul as they're all devotees of Krishna, just he's not acting as that. Does that make sense? So the platform is very different than, you know, the neophyte who is attached to, you know, the cute and cuddly deer. For him, it's not the cute and cuddliness. It's that the deer is acting in such a way that it needs this, so he's filling that in. But the point is he connecting that to Krishna or not? You know what I'm saying? On the Brahman platform, the Paramatma platform, definitely, but on the Bhagavan platform, is he? Right? Because Baba is going to turn into Prema on the Bhagavan platform, not the Brahman platform. You understand? It's the Brahman platform that's the neutral platform. Or we see the, you know, God as the, you know, the supreme and the controller, but what about him as the person? Does that make sense? It means there's Paramatma is a person, but in discussing what he does, it's not about the person. Right? Because why does he control the material energy?
To satisfy the desires of the jiva.
Yes. In other words, to satisfy the desires of the jiva. So since he wants to, it's because as Bhagavan, he wants to please, you know, take care of his parts and parcels and interact with them. But because they're unwilling to interact with him directly, so he has to interact indirectly. Not that there's a need, it's just his mercy, it's his kindness. You know, it's just the natural kindness. So, therefore, what Paramatma means one's not taking into consideration what does he like. You know, you're taking into consideration that he is the Lord of his laws. Right? Does that make sense?
Is it okay if we pray to Paramatma to reveal the personal interaction with Krishna?
Yeah, why not? Pray to anybody for that. I mean, your grandmother might not work, but you know, unless she's a devotee. But yeah. Does that make sense? That's not a problem. Like that. I mean, the gopis were praying to demigods for that, you know, situation to perform activities of pure devotion.
Yeah.
Hmm? Yeah. Oh, okay. As long as it's not in my ear. So, well, great place. With the removal of these obstacles, the devotee makes progress towards nishtha, or steady devotion. When nishtha bhakti blossoms in the devotee's consciousness, the immediate effect is that he is no longer ruled by anger, greed, or any other influences from the modes of passion and ignorance. The naishtiki bhakta becomes firmly fixed on the Supreme Lord, who is always situated in pure goodness, and experiences divine bliss. The Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.19 confirms this. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. So these will also be the symptoms within. You know, so in other words, we've looked at anartas, means here is within, but this is what defines. Because before we'll say these things, but then in connection with nishtha, being fixed, we can see it means all these will be gone. So these five will be gone, those four categories and the six stages. But though we can see some of that, some little slight fragrance is there until ruchi. Right? In this verse, the Sanskrit word cha, and conveys the presence of passion and ignorance in the heart of the devotee. But in the same verse, the expression cheta ekar anavitam, that the mind is unaffected by these, establishes that these material modes are not obstacles on the path of devotion, but reside in the heart in a neutral state until the devotee on the platform of steady devotion devotional service attains bhava. Bhava is the stage of spontaneous loving devotion to the Lord. Right? So, does that make sense? So, they've come to the neutral state. Not that they're not there, but it's not something that he's attracted to or distracted by. Right? That makes sense? So that'll go at bhava.
Right. Therefore, in this sense, sometimes it is referred that Naishtiki Bhakta is Brahma Bhuta also.
Yes, because there Naishtiki means you're completely fixed because now you've attained to the liberated platform. There is no conditioning. So many of these, they apply in other places. Just like if, let's say, I teach you how to cook a dal in a tin can, you know, on two bricks with a few sticks of wood. Right? Now, the same process would be there in the kitchen where you have nice pots and pans and everything's proper. Right? But the technique is the same. It doesn't change. You know, so being fixed, it doesn't change. So the element of being fixed, it'll be there also at any other stage. But it's not so prominent. These two places, it's prominent. So sometimes they're interchanged. So that's many times the point of taking a bhava means anartha nivritti is complete. Because now we see other aspects are already removed. Right? So, but, yeah, does that make sense? But at the same time, there'll be a dynamic change in the devotee's situation when it comes to nishta as a madhyama. Right? So these two platforms are very similar, right? Because of that state of neutral means you're not attracted by the material. It may be there, but it's not a distraction. But the dynamic spiritual hasn't taken up so much, or let's say the devotional, right? So then also that beginning stages of bhava, it's the spontaneous platform, but it's still a neutral state between conditioning and prema. It's constitutional, right? But it hasn't come to prema, right? So you have that similar element at both stages. That's why Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion talks about these things. It can be applied at both. But the point is the second one is the more complete. Right? It means the bhava is more complete than nishta. That's why when he says that Raganuga Bhakti or Raganuga Sadhana can be practiced after Anartha Nivritti, it means specifically bhava. Right, because there you have a spiritual body, you're in the situation, you can do these things. Right, so the spontaneity is natural. But as a madhyam, you don't have the spiritual body. You don't know who you are. You don't know your situation in detail. So therefore, to imagine that you're doing a particular service for Radha and Krishna, that's sahaja. You understand? But to be able to appreciate that this particular rasa or this particular kinds of service that these devotees who are in the pastimes and meditate on those and that mood, that's fine. Right? The problem is that takes the fun out of it, so it means it's actually work. It's actually good qualities and purity. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Would the nishtha usually be mature enough not to fall into these traps, or is there a significant risk that he...
Generally, he shouldn't have the problem. But there's still the need to be trained. In other words, if he's trained, he wouldn't prefer. But if he's not, he may follow and wonder what's wrong. Mm. You know, why is it not working out? Mm. You know? So it's a matter of understanding what's the actual process. So that's why it says following in the footsteps. It has two meanings. One, following the footsteps means you're contemplating on those who are performing those pastimes. But that's different from where you're actually able to directly perform the activity and assist in those pastimes and do it the way they're doing it. But in both cases, it's the mood that's important. Not whether you're doing the activity or not. Because you're doing the activity, mood's wrong, what's the use? Right? So whether you're doing the activity or not, if the mood's right, then that's what's the proper Does that make sense? So that's the actual definition of the raga nuga. So this anartha nivriti will come in both places. But the second one, then it becomes dynamic. The first one is simply a mood. Does that make sense? So a mood, now how much would you see the mood? Right? It means activity, yeah, externally. You can't see it. That's what it means by the wife of the paramour does her duties better. Right? Does that make sense? So they're very fixed and all that. So if that spontaneity has come up already at that stage, you won't see it. Right? Does that make sense?
But this is a rare case that at this stage the spontaneity comes.
That, yes, but the point is it's possible. Just, yes. But the point is it's one of those things we're only pointing out so that it doesn't, it's not something to get distracted by. Neither, in either way, of being involved in it or going around and pointing out where others are not in that. You know what I'm saying?
This is the situation to which Shiva Goswami, in commentary to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, refers that Raganuga is possible in two ways. One is bhava asakti, when one develops spiritual body, or by intense greed at level of...
Yeah, well, the greed has to be there for both. But it's simply, it's all you have is the greed in the one. The other one, you have the facilities. But without the greed, it's not going to happen. Does that make sense? And we see is here that desire for, to have that dynamic desire means there has to be no anartas. So no distractions. So that means one has to be fixed. So one knows what one has to do. So in other words, if that's what one's interest in, then one has to focus to see that one's hearing and chanting and all that is free from anartas. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it'll work. Does that make sense? At the same time, absorb oneself. Because the point is, Krishna's throughout the Gita saying, always remember him. Does that make sense? So like that. And all this comes about by the association of devotees. So if you have quality association with devotees, avoiding offenses, right, and then, you know, proper engagement in the devotional process, then that facility can awaken. Right? Does that make sense? So it's still a practical thing, because remember, it's raga nuga sadhana. It's still sadhana bhakti. And so sadhana bhakti is defined by the 64 items of devotional service. Right? Sixth chapter of Nectar Devotion. Now, whether you're following those because that's the rule, that's vaidhi. You're following those because you're inspired to follow them, that's raga nuga. You know, some may accept that or not, but that's what Prabhupada says and that's what Rupa Goswami says. So, hey, good enough for us. Okay. The Srimad Bhagavatam declares that with the appearance of Naishtiki Bhakti, the devotee's consciousness is unaffected by the material modes of passion and ignorance. His consciousness, thus purified of evil traits like lust, then becomes fixed in the mode of goodness, and the devotee experiences divine happiness. The essential yardstick for measuring perfectly the depth of naishtika bhakti, or the lack of it, anishta bhakti, is whether hearing and chanting has intensified or has stagnated. Right? Does that make sense? So, again, not the situation. Right? An increasing of hearing and chanting thus indicates a rise in nishtita bhakti, while any decrease implies the presence of anishta bhakti. It's really far out when you're working with writers who understand Sanskrit. So for them, they just move around the endings for the particular situation. And for us, it's different words, but it's actually just the same thing. Like nishkarmya, nishkam karma. You know, it's all these different. And then because it's different, no, you know. Here Vishnu is saying nishkam karma, you know, Prabhupada doesn't talk about that, you know, so it's different. No, Prabhupada says nishkarmya, you know, like that. So it's... Right? Why would you say nishkam karma when you say naishkarmya? Does that make sense? We always take words and shorten them anyway. So Sanskrit, the grammar, it's already what we would call, you know, in language is slang. It's already written into Sanskrit, so it's formalized, so there's no slang in Sanskrit. Because how you would do to shorten it anyway is the rules. You don't have to, but you can, and so everybody does. Does that make sense? So it's just inherent. So increase in the hearing and chanting, or a decrease? So that's generally the symptom you can see from the outside. Otherwise, how do you tell? Right? You know, because others, they're distracted. They're talking nonsense during something, or engaged in nonsense, or they have all kinds of desires like that, or they're roughened, their dealings with devotees, offensive. Then it's obvious the symptoms. But somebody where all those have gone away, how do you tell when nishta, how much is going, how much they're absorbed in the hearing and chanting? Does that make sense? How much they're inspired, you know.
Like, also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this is the only measurement of advancement in Kali Yuga, how much the taste for Harinam has developed.
Yes. Yeah, because it means you're not going to get a whole lot else. It means varieties of manifestations of pious qualities aren't necessarily what one would look for or find in the Kali Yuga, right?
Standing in line. Huh? They're not standing in line.
No, it's like that, you know. So it's going to be difficult, because even people who have the qualities, generally if you scratch deep enough, you come to a point where, you know, there's a, you know, minor, you know, nuclear reaction, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So, because you can see from the Shastras, the examples that are given in the stories of what somebody goes through and how good qualities are manifest during that, you know, that's generally not your standard you would set for Kali Yuga. You know? Is that what it is? So it's like, yeah. So that's a good point. So just the taste for the holy name. So here is that you're fixed in it, you like to do it, but then when that, you know, then how much that taste. In other words, there must be some taste if you're doing. But therefore we can see is that if there's some taste in doing it, like the new bhakta comes to the temple for the first time, you know, and is involved in and has a taste for the kirtan and the prasad devotee, that's ruchi, but that's not prominent that you call it ruchi. That would be then sadhu sangha or faith, or, you know, he's beginning, you know, bhajana kriya. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So like that. So we can see is that taste from being fixed and that happiness that's coming from that is significant. But to then call the next category taste means it must be so much more significant. You know, basically one can't stop chanting. One's always looking for opportunities to chant. You know, hear and chant. Does that make sense? So that's, you know, yeah.
Can we say that this test is quite individual?
Individual meaning?
Individual means how can another person
judge the taste? That we'll see in ruchi if they give some, because here this is nishta, so we'll see. But generally it's not important. It's just that there's certain symptoms, because if they have a taste because they're more absorbed, being absorbed is something that's good to do. So what their absorption means and all that, they're an individual that you don't have to worry about. But the symptoms that are there are also good for you. Does that make sense? So that's the common ground. You know? Like that. Now, you know, they'll be generically the same, but, you know, specifically that, you never know. Every individual is different. You know? And, you know, each, unlimited souls, each one's different. But there's common ground. So that common ground is then what we study. Like that. You know, there's no use to that, what taste I'm getting no one else gets, you know, what does it matter? If no one else gets it, why discuss it? You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yeah. An increase of hearing and chanting thus indicates a rise in nishta bhakti, while any decrease implies the presence of anishta bhakti. Ruchi. That's the next page. Okay. See how Krishna immediately fulfills the desires of the sincere endeavor, right? The sincere devotee. So immediately it was the next page. I thought, oh, we have so much more. No, it's Ruchi here. Unless I'm missing a page and I went to Ruchi. No, okay. No. The Ruchi is defined as the taste or attraction that first helped the devotee to relish the process of hearing. And now Ruchi assists the devotee in the process of chanting. As the devotee's taste increases, the repetition of hearing and chanting seems not in the least exacting. Thereafter, Ruchi soon transforms into strong attachment for hearing and chanting. The devotee feels that any activities outside Krishna conscious ones are a waste of energy. For example, a young Brahmana student has to study the scriptures daily by rote. Gradually, he begins to understand the import of the scriptures. This creates fresh interest for him, and his studies are no longer a burden. Right? So in other words, it's not something, oh, I got to sit down and chant my rounds. No, it's just something you can do. It's not, there's nothing distracting. There's no material things on the side. So it's not a burden at all. So we see is here, he's showing these attraction is there, and that will develop into strong attachment. Right, so that goes into asakti. So within Ruchi, that's starting, that's those stages are going. So the taste or attraction, what first helped the devotee relish the process of hearing, now is chanting. Right? Because here it's going on, so you'd like to hear, but chanting means you're doing. So then that taste there, so that seems to be a slight difference where Ruchi is there from the beginning, but now it comes to the point where now the chanting part becomes, you know, there's no burden in chanting or that, you know, now you have to do the different, you know, in other words, engaging in the process. Okay? Yeah. And that we see here now, any activities outside Krishna consciousness are a waste of energy. And why would you spend? This has so much taste. Because otherwise, unless there's a taste for something, why would one do it? Right? Unless it's a duty. But then if it's a duty, you've connected that to Krishna, therefore you'll do it. And then it's Krishna who's the important. But the duty itself is not so important. But if the duty itself is very important, then that means then there's a taste for something else. So does that make sense? So it's a difference here. So you wouldn't want to do anything that's not connected outside Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean that anything changes in the way of what you're doing. It just means that to do anything that wouldn't be on that standard of being connected to Krishna, one would feel a waste. Right? You understand? You catch that subtlety there? Yeah, so it's important. Because that's why it's then, yes, only the chant, that's the only thing. And so what do we do with all these other aspects? We have the conditioning. What do we do with it? So it's engaged. Not that, you know, only chanting has the taste in it. No, but if you engage your conditioned nature, that's also devotional service. Why would someone say that?
He has a taste for
it. Yeah, because there's a taste, right? And we see is that basically it's only at the, you know, when the, how do you say, nishta is more mature, that kind of goes away, right? Though something's there, but at Ruchi, then we see it's no longer there. So it's not an uncommon thing, but the point is that's not the point being discussed. The point is that the holy name is everything and the only thing of value. Everything else is not of value. So he says, no, but then, you know, engage my family in devotional service. Yeah, but then what is the family doing? They're hearing and chanting. Therefore, it's valuable. But as we said before, is that hearing and chanting stands on its own as valuable. Nothing else does. Right? Sense gratification, if it's connected to Krishna, is valuable. If it's not, it's useless. Morality, economics, justice, if they're not connected to Krishna, they're useless. But if they're connected, nice. But the point is that we're connected to Krishna. So then one would analyze, okay, I have these things that I'm still absorbed in, or, you know, in some way. So how can those connect to Krishna? That would be the question. Not, no, but it's okay if they're... No one said it's not okay. We're just saying that everything's useless except for the holy name. So if it's connected, it means it's connected to the holy name. So then it's not useless. But we have to be able to distinguish between direct and indirect. Like that. Because what one's giving up through life is indirect. One's not giving up direct. Right? It's not that when you get 50 years old, then you give up the, you know, the chanting of the holy name. Right? Does that make sense? You don't give up the direct activities. What's given up is indirect, the engagement of indirect. Right? But not just that's given up, it's given up in favor of direct. Right? Does that make sense? You don't spend so much time in the business. You're not trying to expand everything. You have enough. You're just maintaining it. So if you're only maintaining, that doesn't take as much time, especially for someone who's been doing it for the last 20, 30 years. Right? So that means how many hours a day are saved? Quite a lot. You know? I was talking to one businessman the other day. You know, he's quite good at business. You know, it's just natural. It's how you say it. It's in the genes, you know, like that. And we're not talking pants here, right? So then, you know, the work day is 8 hours, and so he'll be at the work 8 hours. And then we were discussing something about, you know, wanting more time for hearing and chanting and that, but the business. So I said, how much time does it take to actually run the business? You know, and he says, 2 to 3 hours a day is all it requires, because everybody else is doing the work. You just have to organize it. You know, you don't have to sit there and, you know, call everybody or do this or sell it or buy it. You just have to know what has to be bought and sold. So he says 2 to 3 hours a day, you know, and I say, you know, does that go up? And I know, says, no, that's standard. So he says, but if I'm not at work, the others won't do their work. So he says, you sit there in your office and set it in such a way that you can sit there and hear and chant. They don't know what you're looking at on your computer. They don't know you're reading Bhagavatam or something like that. But at the same time, all you have to do is look around like this and see that they're not doing something. So then, like that. So then in this way, basically speaking, he can get in 5 hours of hearing and chanting. You know? But he thought if he's not sitting there and looking, you know, has that work look on his face that no one else at work. You know.
It says Ruchi in the beginning is that attraction.
Yes.
Can I make a power between the priority inside somebody, so when we come everything is the field is new, but I have get an inspiration.
I would say here taste, because you see taste and attraction are put together. So that sambandha would mean you presume that. Is that what you're referring to? Yes. Yes, that would be there. It's because you have a field, and then by working, analyzing the field, then there's inspiration. So by coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, dealing in the field, that inspiration comes up, you know, by association. Is that so? Yes. So that element then is, yes, one is trying to. So it's the same thing. So ruchi, just like faith, is coming through. Because conviction means the faith is quite strong, right? So that means faith is coming up through one's quality of association with the Vaishnavas, because you're not manifesting greed, anger, you know, all these different things. You're inspired in their association, not when they start talking, you fall asleep and stuff like that. You know, or when they're talking, you start doing, you know, email or sending SMSs and stuff, you know, so. So that quality is there. The quality of one's performance of bhajan, it proves because of practice. Naturally, any skill increases with practice, right? Then, you know, you're very careful about the anartas. Before, one's overwhelmed by them, and now one is very careful. So one's become quite expert at that. But it's not that anartas aren't still going away, but it's just subtler and subtler, right? And so, but that also means that on the other side, you know, the taste, you know, attachment to, you know, that happiness coming from, right, that affection for, is also increasing. but it's not to the point where it's the prominent that you would call it that this is bhava or this is prema. Right? Does that make sense? You know, because here when we're saying love, that means 24/7. There's never a decrease. So one performs it with affection for Krishna. So it's not that it's not love, but you wouldn't say that I have love for Krishna because, you know, after that is finished, then what? You know what I'm saying? Then love is applied so many other places. So as it was being described, when the love is applied in one place, then it's known by that name. You know what I'm saying? Like you live in a situation, and then you're called by that situation. You live in a country, you're called by that country. You know, you're engaged in an occupation, you're called by that. You know, does that make sense? So how you apply that affection, you're called by that. You know, or it's called by that. You know, it gave all the different examples. If it's love for money, it's called greed. You know, no one will say, no. This love for money is such an exalted romantic. No one will say that. In fact, the ones that have the greed will know that, yeah, that's right, you know. And that's why I have it and no one else does, because I love money and no one else, you know, and they don't, so they don't have it. So it's not a problem.
There's a pastime, Prabhupada, the devotees, are ambitious. And Prabhupada will say, no, the devotees are not ambitious. And then because ambitious in that scenario of America means you want to grow, you want to
prosper. Yeah. The taste for devotional services of two types. Vastu, vaishishtya, apekshini, that which awaits specific requirements. And vastu, vaishishtya, anapekshini, that which does not await any requirements. Vastu means the object of worship, the Supreme Godhead. Right? So in other words, taste that needs specific requirements or taste that doesn't, right? So now he'll explain. In the first type of ruchi, certain requirements are desirable for hearing about Lord Krishna and chanting his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and so on, in order for the devotee to develop a taste for them. For example, the devotee's attraction for kirtan and bhajan is very much dependent on accurate beat, rhythm, and sweet and appropriate melody. When listening to narrations of the Lord, he is dependent on the sound of the voice. When he is worshipping the deity, he is dependent on such conditions as the sanctity of the place, punctuality, a sincere priest, and beautiful flower arrangements. Right? In other words, you understand? So, because that's there, in other words, the taste isn't as high, it's dependent upon the conditioning. Right? Because someone who can't carry a tune in a bucket is not going to worry that the kirtan's not a great melody. You understand? But someone who is, their conditioning means that melody or beat or you know, nice arrangements or all these different things are important, right, in the conditioning, then it will still have an effect in the beginning stages of ruchi, right? Therefore, we try to make as nice arrangements as possible. But we're preaching that it doesn't matter what the arrangements, you serve Krishna, right? The second type of ruchi, vaishishtya anapekshini, is unlike the first type. A devotee who possesses the second type of ruchi hears and chants the Lord's name, qualities, pastimes, and so on in a strong and steady way. When attractive embellishments are added to practices such as hearing and chanting, ruchi gains maturity and uproots the vast vestiges of bad qualities from the heart. In the first type of ruchi, such conditions as the kirtan or bhajan having a beautiful melody was an indispensable requirement. Right? You know, kirtan's going nice, and the kirtan here, and the drums are all that, and then, you know, the kirtan stops, the next person starts to sing, and you don't like it, so then you leave and go out and chant your japa. Right? So that's that kind of, the first kind of ruchi. Right? So, an example we see of the second kind of ruchi was when they were having, from what I have heard, it has been spoken, let's say, that when, in the Uttara Ramayana, when Ramachandra himself, when Lab and Kush were making so much of trouble in fighting that everybody would come. You know, was sent from the palace. Ram would send them. And because they are the narrators of the Ramayana. What we know is the Ramayana is what's spoken by Lav and Kush. Right? And so they know all the details. Everybody, all the personalities, what they're expert at, what they're not. So therefore, you know, when anybody comes in the palace, they already know who they are and what they are. So they know what their weakness is. Right? And so therefore they can defeat them. And so when Hanuman came, they know his is for the taste of hearing Ram's name. But it's not dependent, it's independent, right? So when he comes, they send all the little kids off, you know, from the ashram over to down next to the river to start a kirtan, right? So it's not going to be that great as far as, you know, rhythm and beat and melody and maturity and the voice. So they're just that, and Hanuman, he's coming in, you know, going to, you know, take care of the situation. Here's the kirtan, he goes and sits down, and he's there clapping and taking part and like that. So, you know, he's out of the way. You know, so like that. Then does that make sense? So here it's that it doesn't matter. It's chanting the holy name. Of course, it's bona fide chanting, right? It's not that, you know, that chanting that's not connected with the pure chanting is appreciated. But here it's that it's connected. So therefore, anything it works, right? Therefore, Srila Bhakti, I've heard that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. At you know, just those last, you know, I'm not sure what time, but in the last days or last day or that, then they had, you know, always somebody doing, there was kirtan always going on, so they always had the best kirtaniers from around the movement. But at the very end there, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked this one particular devotee to chant. And he was one who was not good at chanting. So no one could understand why would they have him chant. But the point is his service attitude and everything, the purity, then that was what was appreciated. So that's the second type of ruchi.
Also, Krishna Saraswati Thakur used to play on melodiously or off the beat.
Oh, okay, with the kartals. Yeah, so they do these things on purpose. Because the thing is in the classical academy, then math, everything to do with mathematics, math, geometry, astronomy, and music are all studied. So he was expert in the first three. That's why he's called Bhaktisiddhanta. You know. No, I mean, that's why he was given the title Siddhanta Saraswati. Because of his understanding of math and astronomy and all these things. So it's not that he couldn't figure out the beat. You know, they just do these things just for... We used to hear sometimes on these, when Prabhupada, his vintage series and that, because he would sit down and sing with the harmonium and then go back and then play the mridanga and then go back and then play the kartals. So sometimes you hear the kartals are not technically seemingly in line. But as time goes, you see they are. Prabhupada even had a way. You know how we have the 1-2, 1-2? Prabhupada had a way of playing the kartals 1-2-3, 1-2-3. But he would slow it down. So if you play it half the speed or something, then you play the kartals in the same way, and it'll still, not every beginning of the beat, but every other one, it'll hit the center. So something like that, you could say, well, you know, but this is more sophisticated. We use the two things, you know, the two beat. So true on one level, but at the same time, you would have to be more expert to use that 1-2-3 so that it would match with the 1-2. You know, so it's just these things. By these syntaxes, we would take it, oh, it's just simple. You know, or the guy comes and does classical music, so much like this, and that they know so much more, but... Actually, you know, the acharyas, they know more because they seek for the essence. They're getting into all these things on the side that actually aren't essential. Does that make sense? So, you know, they would do this on purpose. You know, there'd be some arrangement for it. Is that okay?
Yeah, Prabhupada
sing one melody with his voice and plays another melody.
Yeah, yeah. And he's feeling...
Not easy to do at all.
And also you have the thing is that all the things that the guys would fill in, all that, he's doing it on the harmonium. And his voice, he's just keeping simple. So if you understand the music, you could add that if you wanted. If not, then that's already doing it. Why distract the voice? You know, so it's far out. And the subtleties, like, I don't know, there's one of, you could hear, you go through everything, where they're playing the Govindam tape, and you can hear Prabhupada singing Govindam. You heard that? He's singing in the actual raga. We've changed it. So many of these old tunes, you know, you wonder where they came from. They're actually just taking Prabhupada, so we couldn't catch the subtleties of the raga, but we changed the note, you know, from being flat to, you know, to being, you know, not flat, and, you know, stuff like that. Or, and so in there, Prabhupada's singing a very different, then you get the feeling of raga. Otherwise, Govinda, it's a nice tune, but when he's singing it, you feel that effect of raga, like that. And it's just a slight difference in just the nuance in the, and that's it. You know, so, and then there's one tune that was very, you know, it's a Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. You know, only devotees only from the 60s will sing, like Dina Bandhu still sings it. And I was wondering, where does this come from? You know, because it's such a nice tune and everything like that. And then the other day I'm listening, and then, you know, I mean, I've heard this so many times, but this is the first time I caught, hey, they're just singing this tune of Prabhupada, but they just adjusted the notes, and so they come up with this, but it was actually Prabhupada's melody. Like that, so. Like that.
Lost in translation.
Yes. Does that make sense? So they'll do these things just to, you know, it's like Jara Bharat. You know, I mean, is it rocket science to figure out you go to the toilet, then wash? You know what I'm saying? That he would wash, then go to the toilet, you know? So, like that. But they don't have any attachment to, you know, I got to be expert at everything, and that's their inspiration for developing. You know, it's there. They just feel like that. You see it with the... very common when you see local, you know, pious Indians come to the kirtan. They never clap in time. Doesn't matter. It's just the mood. And so according to the mood, they clap. It doesn't matter. You're going fast, slow, they're the same. It doesn't matter. It's not important to them. Because to them, it's not if I get the dance step, I fit in. Or I'm a devotee or like that. But generally, someone has that particular kind of need for sophistication in that way, then they have to fit in. Because if you don't, then there seems to be something wrong with you. But to them, it doesn't matter to them. Because anyway, for them, dancing in those ways is not important. They'll just, you know, there and stuff like that anyway. So you know, it's just what they do. You know, so unless the ladies are dancing, and then they have a method of dancing that's generally different than we dance anyway. We mean circles, and they do, or they have waves, they do. You see it sometimes in Vrindavan, or occasionally, I think last year before, some crew came by, like that. Generally Gujaratis, you see, like that. I think one time Manipuris came by, and they had their big, like they had these poles, bamboo poles, and they're dancing with those poles, and you know, all these kinds of things. And, you know, stuff like that. But we don't, you know, it's just whatever kind of comes up. Like that. Okay, so that's Ruchi. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Okay, now, 6, Asakti. As Ruchi ripens, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes the devotee's only object of worship and meditation. This is described as the stage of asakti, or attachment. Asakti is like a cluster of buds unfurling from the main stem of the creeper of devotion. Shortly, some of these buds may blossom into the flowers of bhava, or loving sentiments, and others may mature into the fruits of prema, or love of Godhead. Let's hear how he used the example, because we'll take bhava as the bud of prema. But here he's brought in plain, but then he said fruits, because they said that fruit of love of God. So then, you know, they've very, very nicely did that. So you can see is also is that this element of the asakti, and it's just bhava is just that next stage, you know, the next natural stage. So there's not so much difference. The asakti in the beginning stage of bhava, it's not that much difference.
At one place, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Uttama starts from asakti.
Okay. Very good.
Would you also count ruchi to asakti?
Ruchi to asakti.
That would also be like a...
Here it's more, he's giving it when ruchi ripens. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, when that maturity is there, then you would see that these... Because otherwise it had all these buds are all enclosed, mm-hmm. and then when they start coming out, you know, like that, so then it becomes, they're there. So that's that, but the, you know, then that bud will give rise to the fruit. But also you could technically say the bud itself, that's the bomb, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's that unfurling of them when they're coming out and they can be seen, you know. Like that, so it's natural. Because all there is Krishna, right? Only object of worship and meditation. There isn't anything else. So then, yeah.
So in this case, ruchi could be looking at the flower before the bud, like the very first sprout, like the flower is going to come.
Could, but I wouldn't push the example. You know, because then they say, no, but it's all based in Shraddha, so that would be the root. You know, I mean, so, you know what I'm saying? So the example is giving of the growing of the creeper. But it's not so much the example that's important as we catch the point that's being made. You know, that's what we were like these first... yeah, I would say so. You know, the beginning of last year and the beginning of this year, generally any distraction in the class was because of expanding on the example as opposed to catching the point that the example was illustrating. You know, of course, there must be some connection, otherwise why would that example be able to be used? But the difficulty comes as the example is limited, that it is establishing, it has something in common that which you can catch the point. There's a common mood or a common element. But it's not that the whole thing is common. You know what I'm saying? That's the ruchi is the means to perfection, while asakti is the goal, the object of worship and meditation. In the case of ruchi, the devotee increases these symptoms of bhakti, innate in both ruchi and asakti, by refining the process of devotional service. Right? The symptoms of bhakti, innate here would mean they're not manifest, or innate meaning that they're inherent.
Inherent within.
Inherent. By refining the process of devotional service. In the case of asakti, the devotee achieves the same by surrendering to the attractions of the object, Krishna. In essence, both the end and the means qualify to become one. So much the, what do you call it? Conditioning that says the end of the means and the next thing is just, you know, because end and means and justify, that's all used in the Western is one thing. So both the ends and the means qualify to become one. So at a certain stage of realization, they are the same. So in other words, the taste and the attachment are the same, because we also see is that from attraction, there's more attachment. From attachment, then there's more attraction, right? Because that dynamic between Prajumna and Ariruddha is always going on. When something is experienced, then it moves back to the field, so therefore one's attraction is greater. So therefore in the endeavor, one gets a further result, right? And that further result then comes back as part of the field, and so it furthers the attraction. Does that make sense? So the two nourish each other. right? But the chanting process, you know, this is the main. So that, and here we see that taste, so that attraction, then that taste is the medium for the attraction, the attachment increasing. So.
We can also see from this that ruchi is more like for the process and attraction is for Krishna, who is attractive.
Yes. Yeah. It means he's the ultimate. Yeah, he's the goal, the ultimate. So he's that supreme. So therefore, you see, is that it gives those two. You know, there's attraction, but then we see is the. Yeah. So ruchi, and also we mentioned here in ruchi, it wasn't the hearing, but it was the chanting, where it distinguished it, that the taste was coming in, is that one's able to chant. Because, you know, nice kirtan is going, you're happy to sit down, and the class is going, you're happy to hear. But to do it on your own, that's where the burden comes in. Someone else's involved, you get involved, that's easier. Right? Because you see he made distinctions, even in, you know, your chanting and someone else's, right? It means in laya and vikshepa, right? Wasn't it? No, excuse me, in laya. Weakness of being more you know, soporific? Soporific. During hearing about the Lord while chanting, right? So hearing, you're falling asleep, but chanting because you're active, so then you don't fall asleep because you're doing something, right? And more about remembering than during hearing, right? So hearing is not so much, but, you know, in how you say it? But remembering, then we're not so interested. Does that make sense? So distinction is being made here. So then, does that make sense? Confidential, so, and in both of these, of course, one is fixed, one has that faith, one is performing the process, one is doing it in the association of devotees. So we see always the previous one is added to the, right? Just like when you move to, from servitorship includes the neutrality or appreciation. Friendship includes service. Parental includes friendship. Conjugal includes parental. So always, they always include the previous. Does that make sense? But because we're not trying to bring those stages as a progression, so that will be emphasized. But in here, they're showing a progression. It's not as much spoken about. Because otherwise, then you'll just say, oh, it's just the same thing. I'm not. Where's the progression? So if you feel you're moving from one to the next, then there's more. Does that make sense? But we're not trying to establish, you know, the rasas or movement through that, or, you know, that this is better than that, and, you know, it's just the difference in taste. But it's more intense, it's more full, that's all. But, you know, the taste is fine, whatever it is. So. Confidential devotional service and meditation at the stage of ruchi is not mature, but at the stage of asakti, it is properly mature. In that case, we can conclude that the difference between ruchi and asakti lies in how mature is the devotee's confidential meditation. Right? Just like before, it was anishta and nishta bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? I mean bhajana kriya, right? So anishta bhajana kriya and nishta bhajana kriya. Right? So the difference between the two is the anartas. Right? So in here then technically they're the same, but the difference is in the maturity. So both, you know, in the hearing and chant, there's the service and meditation. But in asakti, it's more mature. Asakti is able to cleanse the mirror of the devotee's consciousness to the extent that the Supreme Lord is always reflected in it. In the early stages of ruchi, the devotee comments, "Alas, I am under heavy siege from materialistic life. So how can I bring my heart to the sanctuary of devotional service to the Supreme Lord?" And this is the meaning of poetic, right? How they put it together. You know, rather than, yeah, Maya's always bothering me. Yeah. Enough of this noise. Such a sincere prayer releases one's consciousness from its material bondage and attaches it to the Supreme Lord. For the devotee at the asakti stage, before he even attempts such a prayer, he finds himself already attached to the Lord. All this is accomplished effortlessly, right? Because we see is in the process, that's always reversing, right? So this would be also your point. What he's saying here is where Bhaktivinoda Thakura, you can count asakti in with uttam, right? Because here it's reversed. You're already thinking of Krishna, and then you're worried, maybe worried about that I'm, you know, materially absorbed or distracted or like this. But you're already absorbed in Krishna. Yes.
Would it be the Kanista level of uttam?
Yeah. Yeah. That would work. Right? In other words, there's something that sets it apart, but at the same time, you have this aspect where there's a non-difference. Right? Next, we shall discuss the dealings of the devotees on the platform of asakti. He is always searching for saintly association because any other company no longer attracts him. Coming upon an assembly of devotees, he cries out, "At last I have come to a place where I shall surely be blessed, because this gathering of devotees will remove the evil within me." He throws himself to the ground and speaks from the heart in utter humility. A Mahabhagavata, who is the crest jewel of any Vaishnava assembly, comes forward to receive the visitor and embraces him with warm affection, offering him a place to sit. On his part, the newcomer feels hesitant, but sits down humbly. He appeals to the Vaishnavas, "O saviors of the fallen souls, you are the best healers for the plague of materialism. Kindly diagnose my malady and describe the proper medication and diet to restore my spiritual well-being." Right? What's interesting is when, because here's the technical, right? It means it's bringing out a technical point that this is how the person of Sakti will act. And so we see that when Bhaktivinoda Thakura is writing his novels, you'll see all these things, but we won't necessarily connect in that way. We'll just know, oh, okay, this is something like that. You know, or Chaitanya Charitamrita, like this, you know, we'll just get all these things, but they're actually indicative of certain symptoms. Tears streaking down his cheeks, such a devotee begs for the Vaishnava's mercy. He eagerly waits to hear their nectarine instructions, the stays in the company for a week or so, filled with happiness, basking under their compassionate glances, and always looking for opportunity to serve them to their full satisfaction. On another occasion, while walking past the village, he sees a young Brahmana boy engrossed in playing. He bows down before the boy, remembering such great sages as Sanaka and Sanandana, and asks him, "Shall I ever be able to find my Lord Vrajendranandana Krishna?" The inarticulate reply that the child gave at the time elated to him, but at other times it leaves him feeling melancholic. The inarticulate reply that the child gave at the time elated him, but at other times it leaves him feeling melancholic.
Change of tenses.
Does that make any sense to me? Or is some word been left out, or? Oh, okay, okay.
The response was
oh, okay.
His mood.
Okay. Okay, I'm just breaking it wrong. That's why British English, you can put in more commas. You know? Yeah, it's like otherwise you can't. Okay, the inarticulate, I was thinking it, the inarticulate means those who don't know the devotional process, they reply that the child gave it. And I was trying to think, what does this mean? But it means the inarticulate reply that the child gave at the time elated him. But at other times, it leaves him feeling melancholic.
Inarticulate is an adjective.
Yeah. Yeah, so then it's like, yeah. So, okay. That would make sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because sometimes the child may say something very, that he said something, then the interaction, it reminds him of the thing, but sometimes it's not, maybe it wasn't, he didn't have that same, he wasn't on that platform, or, you know, thinking, you know, in some sense. Once in a while, this Asakti devotee feels like staying at his home, where he broods like a greedy trader thinking, where can I go to? What shall I do? How can I acquire my most coveted of objects, my beloved Lord? Listless, he so ponders with a sad, drawn countenance. Next moment, he falls off to sleep, wakes up again and sits up with a blank, faraway look. When family members gently question him on his uncanny behavior, he remains silent. At times, he feels like offering some explanation, but is forced to remain silent because he is unable to articulate his emotions. It starts to dawn upon the family members that he may be actually confused or even mentally deranged. It starts to dawn upon them. And the foolish neighbors simply regard him as mentally retarded.
It's more direct.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, maybe this, that. Ah, then the politically correct regard him as mentally challenged.
Requiring assistance.
The logicians think him a fool. The Vedic scholars view him as one suffering from acute psychological aberrations. The karmis, or fruit of workers, avoid him as if he were depraved. And those who are suspicious and even offensive to devotees slander him, calling him arrogant, and so on. This way, people brand him as mute and mad. In fact, he is a highly qualified devotee, and a realized soul so elevated that he is unsullied by the mundane show of people offering him respect or showering him with insults. He is as oblivious of the urbane as he is of the banalities of material existence. Is that urbane and banality? They're connected. They're the same root. Meaning both of them are bad.
Like the
more refined, and banality is all the bad qualities. So I'm just wondering if the urbanity is based on banalities. Such a devotee is swimming in the nectarian currents of devotion because of his strong attachments to the Transcendental Association of Saintly Devotees. Huh. That was Baba. So, this is where he gives so much, but at the same time it starts going into areas where it's just, there's no more questions. I remember when we were doing the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, you know, the first ones, you know, all the questions, and then as he gets higher and higher into it, then it just, at one point, it's just all nice. Yeah, great.
It sounds like... Like the other dudes, we're starting to get into that kind of area.
Well, I would say is that his comment, what he brought out, or Bhaktivinoda, where is that he says that?
I would have to check reference.
Okay, if you get that, that would be good. So I get the idea is that, because Asakti, as we're defining here, will be generally, and will be practiced within the material body, right? While the beginning stages of bhava is being practiced within the spiritual body. So there would be very much a similarity between them. Does that make sense? Like that. But it's not that these symptoms also aren't there in the higher devotees. They also think they're completely mad also. You know, so if it wasn't for the maidservants and friends taking care of Radharani, her own family members, it's a write-off. Because you never hear about them involved in taking care of Radharani. Like that. It's just, you know, they just may discuss in the morning what her duties are going to be. But that's about it. Yeah, so I would say there's a great similarity there between the two. This one's with the spiritual forms, one's without. But it doesn't mean that within this body one can't come to doing that, but it's through meditation. So the meditation then it becomes even deeper. So this meditation would come through there, and that would be what stage one would be at within the stages. Because meditation, because this smarana dasa means one's come to the point of samadhi. So the other points before doesn't mean they haven't started earlier, in the earlier stages, or even, you know, in sadhana bhakti. Right? Because we can see here is the meditation in ruchi is not as developed, mature as is in asakti. Right? So that means already you've had to have been moving through stages of meditation. So
yes, it's that it's able to think the mirror, the devotee's consciousness, the extent, the recipient world is always affected. Which means it's full immersion.
Yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that affection is as full as prana. But it means he's always thinking of Krishna.
Yes, but the extent of the Supreme Lord is always reflected to me.
Yes.
It indicates that in the other, like Ruchi, the Supreme Lord is not always reflected.
No. That's why it's not mature. Yes. His meditation is not always... In other words, he may be thinking of Krishna, but seeing the personality may not be as much. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there's nothing distracting him in Ruchi, but that absorption, you know, being reflected, because reflected then would give the indication of, you know, seeing the form, so the Lord and all that. But the degree of love may not be there, but his degree of absorption is full. But now that has to, that can get more, because samadhi means that attachment and everything is so great, you know, that attraction is so great, so then that warrants, rather than it being the mirror of the mind, Krishna directly. You know what I'm saying? Though there's no difference, but still, like that. Does that make sense? So at that point, then one personally interacts. Does that make sense? We'll see how much of that comes up. Baba.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.